Can I thank our musician and singers? It's without a keyboard, it can sound a bit bad sometimes, but Ian is doing a wonderful job. Thank you. Yeah. Oh, don't fall over. All right. Just put it in the machine at the back. It's interesting, those songs were picked before we knew about this conflict, and yet the last two seem to have been very, very pointed and very much encouraging what we're thinking. But anyway, Genesis. If you think that some bits are a puzzle, today's reading may be one. It has made people, I read all the references to it, and it's made some people go, what on earth's going on? I mean, I don't blame them. Do you? I mean, these verses talk about the burial of someone's wife, a whole chapter, and that's it. And you think, well, why is it here? Well, how's that going to help me in my faith and in my travel with Jesus? In fact, why are we looking at it today? Why don't we just have a coffee and go home? And I've been looking at Abraham over the last couple of weeks and the birth of Isaac and Ishmael and then the attempted sacrifice of Isaac, which reminds us that God isn't into killing children, because he said no. That's great if your children are unruly, isn't it? And then we get this passage. And remember, Abraham was called out of a city for a reason. He was living in Ur in Mesopotamia. That's not because we don't know the name. That was the name, Ur. Now part of Iraq, if you can imagine that area of the world. And archaeologists tell us that the city was big, between perhaps 100,000 and 200,000 people. So that, in those days, that was enormous. A thriving, a civilized metropolis. And it was also polytheistic, if you know what that means. They worshipped many gods. Your god belonged to your family. You worship that god. You'd carry their symbol and you'd rub it for luck. And the mentality was that your transaction with your god was sort of risk-reward. If you did the right things, your god would give the right things, and if not, you would be punished or killed. And this was Abraham's setting when God called him, his background. He's wealthy, so he considered himself blessed by his god. And it's interesting then that Yahweh called Abraham out of this city and into the wilderness. Take your family and leave her, he said, into the place I have for you. I will be a blessing to you. So Abraham heads alongside the river Euphrates, and then there's famine. So he drops into Egypt, just a quick visit, about 800 to 1,000 miles by foot, with a caravan of servants and animals and goods for years. So don't moan next time you're traveling, will you? You know, I've got to go to Cornwall, oh dear. And he does this because God promised to make out of him a great nation, if you remember the story. So just think what he's doing, all this traveling. He's been called out and it's taken him years. And all this time he's thinking, well, where do we stop? Where do we stop? God says, your offspring will outnumber the stars. This is how much I care about you, the blessing you will be to the world. And if you're Abraham, you may be thinking, is God crazy? You know, where on earth does this start? I'm in the desert. I'm trying to understand this. I have no children. How on earth can that work? And that's what happened to the when he was called. And as we heard, Abraham and Sarah take matters into their own hands, and Abraham has a child, Ishmael, with Hagar, the slave girl, and Sarah gets tired of Hagar and sends her and Ishmael into the desert to die. Yet God accommodates that and says, no, through Ishmael I will create a nation. And then God says to Abraham and Sarah, you will have a son. In their geriatric years, when they should be in a nursing home. And Sarah gives birth to Isaac, and God fulfills his promises. And years later, God says, take your son, go to a place I will show you, and sacrifice him. And then God stops the process to show Abraham that he values human life. Now, if this was Disney, We would think that Abraham, Isaac, Sarah, and Elsa, and Ariel, and the seven dwarfs live happily together in the frozen castle. But no, it's chapter 22, before our reading. Abraham goes to Beersheba to settle, and notice Sarah isn't with him. Neither is Isaac. What's happened to that family? The Bible never leaves out the grit and suffering. Life is really tied up in a bow. I mean, perhaps, who knows, perhaps Sarah's gone, I can't cope with this. I'm taking Isaac. Did you grow up with Sunday school? Yes, you grew up with Sunday school? Did you learn this song? Father Abraham had many sons had Father Abraham. You know that one? Yes? And at the end you go, right arm, left, right, whatever that is, and so on. Yes? But you know, it could easily say, Father Abraham had just two sons. Only two had Father Abraham. He sent one away to die in the desert, and one he almost killed, stabbing. That's the reality of the story we're told. Abraham sent one son and mistress to die, and the other he probably never spoke to again after all that trauma. So on to chapter 23, which is our reading, Sarah died. Maybe they separated, who knows? Some third century rabbi said Sarah separated from Abraham because she heard that God commanded Abraham to try to kill Isaac and couldn't cope with it. Who knows? She died in Hebron. Probably that was her family home where she came from. So she went back to her family, left Abraham, went back to her family. And you can understand that, can't you? I can. Gosh. You were, and you know, if you're starting to feel ill, you want to be with your family at the end, don't you? All we know is that at Sarah's death, Abraham was not there. And our first verse says Sarah in Hebron, 127 years old, dies. Abraham hears and he mourns for her. Now, this is the only time in the whole Bible that any woman is paid this much respect and her age is told. Sarah lived to 127. No other woman, not even Mary or Esther, is named living that long. And this says to me, here was a woman of value, somebody God loved. Sarah lived to be 127. She died at Kiriath Arba, that is Hebron, in the land of Canaan. And Abraham went to mourn for Sarah and to weep over her. Now today, when someone dies, typically there's a medical transaction, isn't there? Then a funeral experience, a body in a casket, a cremation, a memorial, a light lunch, and then the family is essentially left alone. And often when I talk to people about funerals, I always try to say to them this, this mourning will last a long time. You'll think you get over it, and then, you know, it comes back to you. And there is much to learn here about the significance of death and how much we should support each other. Sarah dies. A person of honor. Abraham goes to mourn from Beersheba to Hebron, a 15-hour walk. So don't complain about a 30-minute drive to the crematorium. It gives him time to think. And isn't that important? To remember. And again, in funerals, I always say to people, you know, the time when you're talking together after the service is just as important. You're remembering, you're thinking, you know, you're bringing up all these memories. And have you ever found yourself remembering and grieving later? You know, joy, despair. This is our story, really, isn't it? He gets to the tent erected over her. Now, that's what they'd have done. They'd have built a tent over the body. And at the time, bodies weren't embalmed, not in that area. They were left out. In Sumerian culture, like in Ur, where Abraham came from, you would leave your loved one's body in the fields for the birds of prey to pick clean. You believed that the birds would take them to the gods. So imagine that on a sympathy card. Sorry to hear, I hope she's picked clean nicely. But that's what happened. Abraham has a long journey. He mourns over Sarah, anything from 3 to 30 days of mourning. He would tear his clothes, spread ash over himself, shave his beard, cut his hair to symbolize grief. And then Abraham rose, it said, from beside his dead wife and spoke to the Hittites. He said, I am a foreigner and a stranger among you. Sell me some property for a burial site so I can bury my dead. That's typical bargaining at the time. Here's a stranger and he needs their kindness. Stranger in a strange land. And verse 5, the Hittites replied to Abraham, sir, listen to us. You are a mighty prince amongst us. Well, lovely. Bury your dead in the choicest of our tombs. None of us will refuse you his tomb for burying your dead. In other words, we recognize the pain of death. We've all felt it. Choose. We'll support you. And then it says, Abraham rose and bowed before the people, and he said to them, if you're willing to let me bury my dead, listen to me and intercede with Ephron, son of Zohar, so he'll sell me the cave which belongs to him. He likes the look of the cave. That's where he wants to bury Sarah. He's not going to leave her out. Not her bones, so once it's picked clean, he will go and move her to the cave. Ask him to sell it to me for the full price as a burial site amongst you. Now, Ephron was sitting among them, and he replied to Abraham, no, my lord, listen, I will give you the field. And I give you the cave that's in it. I give it to you in the presence of my people. Bury your dead. And again, Abraham bowed down. This is all, part of the culture of respect. And he said to Ephron, listen to me if you will. I will pay the price of the field. Accept it from me so I can bury my dead there. And then, he's not under any obligation to everyone else. And Ephron answered, listen to me, my lord, the land is worth 400 shekels of silver. But what is that between you and me? How much? What's going through Ephron's mind? 400 shekels of silver. Much later, years later, Jacob buys a plot of land for 100 shekels of silver. 400 is worth today maybe £125,000, who knows, something like that. And it starts with, no, you have the field. And Abraham goes, no, let me buy it. And all right, it's this much. Abraham agreed to Ephron's terms and weighed out the price. 400 shekels of silver. So Ephron's field in Machpelah, both the field and the cave and all the trees, was deeded to Abraham as his property. So Abraham had been called out. God called him out of Ur, giving him a son and land and family, and things went wrong, and all those things come to pass in this moment. Whilst mourning Sarah, he has purchased land forever. He's no longer a wandering person. Because of the kindness of Hittites, he ceases to be a stranger. And the promise of God, even in suffering, is fulfilled. Abraham's been on a journey with nowhere to call home. You ever feel like that? I live here, but I'm lonely. I wish I had a place to call my own. If so, you're in good company. Abraham was called out of Ur with its luxuries because God asked him not to store treasures on earth into the wilderness. You will be a blessing, he said, not just to accumulate wealth, but to others. And it will happen through your family. It's a bumpy ride. It's tragic. It's hopeful. It's weird. And we wonder why it's here. But it shows how God evolves in the consciousness of this family. God sees and knows and provides and mourns with. And notice, as Abraham buys this property and he mourns for his wife, God doesn't say, get over it. Kill the Canaanites. Let's move on. Instead, there's a silence. If you've ever thought you must move through suffering quickly, let this remind you, you don't. Suffering and mourning is a beautiful posture we experience. Don't rush it. Afterwards, Abraham buried his wife Sarah in the cave in the field of Machpelah in the land of Canaan. Remember, the land itself is not important. What's important is what it signals. God says you'll get a family and land to be a blessing to the world, not for your own sake. Abraham can say, I've got land now. We can begin that journey of family and blessing for the world. It's a realization of promise. And what does that all mean to us? Is it just a strange story? I think for me it says, firstly, God's not into material wealth. He's also not into killing children, which we had in the previous story. He's into blessing, not cursing. God provides a family, a nation, and land. And then, in first century Judaism, much later, we see almost the same cycle. Now the Jewish community, with a broken sense of God, are occupied by Rome, strangers in their land. And this time, they're not experiencing the kindness of strangers. And at that time, the Jews expected the Messiah to return them to their former glory. Enter Jesus, God made flesh. He subverts empire again. God is not into wealth, not into war. God intends that you love your enemies. The way we love best is to serve and care. In John 11, Jesus gains momentum. He's moving forward and he heads to the cross. And people listen to him. Friends of Jesus, Mary and Martha, send word to say that Lazarus, their brother, is sick. He will die. We know you can raise people from the dead. Please come, they say. And Jesus says to his disciples, we're not going yet. Meanwhile, Lazarus dies. And Jesus arrives at the tomb. And you would expect that Jesus would flex his muscles and say, I am the Messiah. What's this? But eventually he does. But before that is the shortest verse in the Bible. Do you know that one? Jesus wept. We see the heart of God. Jesus wept. This isn't Jesus standing strong, one tear down his cheek. No, the Greek word means burst into sobbing. God weeps with his family, mourns over death. He doesn't hurry through it. Jesus has resurrection power, but chooses to mourn with people in pain. Don't we need to share that today? So Abraham, knowing hope is around the corner, mourns his wife. Jesus, knowing resurrection is coming, weeps over Lazarus. This is what we share. Yet if you asked a non-church girl what church is like, would they say, oh, it's a place of new life? Or it's where you bury your dead? Which one? Sometimes I think too often people think it's the second one. We have this message of hope, new life. Let that be our story. Let us not dismiss sorrow quickly. Let us be a family that mourns together, that remembers together, that experiences loss together, moves into hope together, and loves Jesus well together. Let us hope we can be the blessing the world needs. And let us open our doors to breathe new life, not just bury the dead. That's our story. Amen. Let's pray.